do I want to be sold by AI? And I don't know that I ever do. And that's like AI SDRs. I think that, you know, I think most people are going to get annoyed by the mass blast of emails, and people are more often than not going to do 80% of the research before they ever decide to contact a company. And most of that research is going to be done by themselves or by referral. But truly, I don't know that we're ever going to lose some of that human necessity in terms of that connection.
Welcome to another episode of Go-To-Market Mavericks, the podcast about go-to-market innovators, risk takers, and leaders, and the unique strategies, tactics, and playbooks they use to succeed. On with me today is Sean Gentry, who leads West Coast sales at Webflow. Prior to his time there, he was a director of sales at Outreach and has been in sales leadership for more than a decade. When he is not coaching his reps on sales methodology, he's either exercising outdoors or on the hunt for the best breakfast burrito. Sean, I'm excited to have you on, and definitely need to give your plugs for the best breakfast burritos you've tasted.
Oh, I've got them all day, Madsen. We can talk about them. Thanks for having me, first and foremost. So I live in Seattle, Washington now. I'm born and raised in Los Angeles. Probably better breakfast burritos down in LA than there is. But if you're ever in Seattle, there's a great place called Stoneway Cafe. I can't speak highly enough about them. Amazing breakfast burrito. So yeah, as you said, I lead West Coast sales for Webflow right now. I've been here. I just actually hit my 2-year mark last week. Prior to that, I was the director of sales at Outreach. But my background actually was not in sales. Growing up in LA, I was an actor in LA for, gosh, almost a decade, growing up through high school and college. And you know, was the typical prototype of an LA living, like an actor's dream, that I was auditioning during the day and bartending at night and struggling, and you know, had some small successes here and there, but nothing really major. And then funny enough, when I met my now wife, she told me I had to get a real job. And so I quit acting. And a buddy of mine was doing inside sales for a company selling WordPress websites. This was, gosh, like 15, you know, plus years ago. And I knew nothing about sales, didn't know anything about real estate, which was the industry, or websites, but decided I wanted to date this girl seriously, so figured I'd give it a shot. And I started as an SDR, and I realized that, you know, picking up the phone was just kind of like acting in spurts, right? And that's what sales was. And realized that I could memorize a script and, you know, improv live on the phone. And so I was an SDR there, moved up into AE. I did that for a couple of years, and I actually ended up moving to a company called Snack Nation, which at the point, or when Snack Nation was a company, it was the second fastest growing sales org in LA behind Oracle. We went from, gosh, 8 reps to almost 100 in 2 years. It was led by my mentor, Kevin Dorsey. I got to work alongside him for 2+ years, which was fantastic. And that was my first manager role. So I managed multiple different teams there. And then when I moved to Seattle, I ended up managing enterprise sales at Zillow, moved over to be the director of sales at Outreach for over 3 years, and then, yeah, now here leading corporate sales for Webflow. So it's been a different journey. I've managed everything from SMB to corporate to enterprise to an SDR team, and now landing on the kind of the mid-market or corporate segment for Webflow. It's been a hell of a ride.
When were you at Zillow again? What years was that?
Oh my gosh. So we moved to Seattle, gosh, about 6 years ago. So it must've been 2017 to late 2017 to 2019. I was there for about 2 years. And then funny enough, I joined Outreach, right before COVID hit. So I was in the office for like 6 weeks before COVID hit. And then, you know, we all thought like, oh, we'll be out for about a week and then we'll be back in the office. And then here I am still working remote 4 years later.
I do recall that exact conversation I had with my colleague. And yes, it was not a 2-week stint, as we all know, in hindsight. Okay, so totally like vanilla path, start out as an actor, and then as an actor in training, and then shift over to sales. You know, that is not a typical path, and I guess, you know, that might be a pattern, but I'd love to just get your quick take on what advice would you give to aspiring salespeople, sales leaders that are kind of at the beginning of their career?
It's kind of the age-old question of, are great salespeople born or are they trained, right? And I think part of that is so much comes down to some of the intangibles that you're born with, right? In a sense that there's certain things that can't always be taught, like grit and perseverance, coachability, organization, some things that come a little bit more innate to others. But great salespeople are really coached. And I had the benefit of being coached by some fantastic sales leaders, Kevin Dorsey, Mark Kozoglow at Outreach. I've had great mentors, great sales leaders. I feel very fortunate for that. But I think innately, I grew up playing sports also. And I think one of the things, you know, it often gets related of like, you know, athlete to salesman or saleswoman. And one interesting thing is that to be, you know, a great athlete, whether you played in high school, college, these people dedicated tens of thousands of hours to practicing, right? And I think when most people get a job, they think like, oh shit, I don't have to practice anymore, right? I can just show up to my sales calls and that's my practice. But I think that was always instilled in me. I grew up playing basketball. I play golf now. And if I don't spend hours on the range or hours on the putting green, like I know I'm not going to play well. And I feel like I've always kind of equated that methodology and thought process to selling and to managing, that I have to continue to hone my craft when I'm not on calls. And that comes down to practicing, reading, listening to my own calls, listening to, you know, audiobooks or podcasts, or in trying to continue to develop my skill set versus just coming into a call and winging it. And so I truly believe that there are some things that if people want to get into sales, there are innate traits that I think you have kind of the leg up on, right? Like if you're naturally curious, you do have that grit and perseverance if you are coachable. But on the same token, there are so many things that you can do outside of what your company is going to give you in terms of enablement to prepare yourself for the next role. So I mean, without rambling too much, I always get asked like, oh, how do I break into tech? Or how do I go from SDR to AE? Or how do I start becoming a manager? And it's like, learn everything about them now. Like you should be out learning everyone around you by listening to as much as you can, by reading as much as you can, like asking people for mentorship, like, you know, get out of your comfort zone and try to pick up new skill sets and prepare for the job you want.
You shared all of this experience you've had till now, working on teams, leading teams at really great companies, frankly. What are some of the drivers of success that you've seen that have remained the same? And like, what is changing? Like, what are the opportunities and things that, you know, sales teams, sales managers should be looking at as opportunities, maybe emergent things that weren't there 10 years ago?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. You know, if I look at the companies that I've been a part of, that I've been lucky enough to be a part of, the structure and the process stays somewhat the same. And I think like if you break it down to one, having a successful sales culture, the cadence in which you operate should theoretically be the same, whether you're selling software, tech, services, garden hoses, like it doesn't matter, right? You should be able to, whether you're an AE or a manager, the way that you practice your sales skills, the way that you show up for calls, the way that you're doing your prep, the way that you're doing your follow-up, and the way that you're continuing, like I said, to develop that sales ability, whether it's salesperson or manager. It's been the same whether I was selling snacks at Snack Nation, we were working with, you know, brokers that owned huge brokerages, Zillow, to obviously, you know, Outreach, and then now Webflow. So I think like the methodology of running a strong sales org, and we can unpack that, it has been relatively the same. Obviously now, like that I'm working at Webflow, we didn't have all this fancy tech that we had, you know, when I was working at Snack Nation, I think we implemented Outreach there and we were one of Outreach's like largest customers. And we had like 50 sellers at that point, you know, like that was a huge deal. I remember they flew half their team to Los Angeles and they're based here in Seattle to like implement us in person. That's how big of a deal it was for them. Right. And that was, that's like a decade ago. And so we didn't have like all the automation, the AI, you know, the tracking. This was like a brand new thing. We were doing everything. I remember we had the huge whiteboard behind us where we, at the end of the day, we were logging like how many calls we made and how many people we talked to. We were doing everything.
Oh, yeah.
By hand. Yeah. And so it's like, that was like the first motion. It's funny. Now I work for a PLG company too. And Snack Nation, we used to send out these snack boxes. I used to, like, if you were an office manager, I would call you and say, hey, like, are you buying your snacks from Costco? Or are you going to a grocery store? Like, let me send you a free, like, healthy snack box. And then we would, like, write down, you know, on the whiteboard, like Wolf of Wall Street style, how many, like, sample boxes we were sending out. So I think, like, while the process and the structure of, like, truly honing in on your sales craft has remained constant with me in my career, the technology and the way we've done things has vastly changed. Some better, some for, I don't want to call it worse, but just like some for the unnecessary, I guess. There's a lot of tools out there that people are selling that, you know, you probably just don't need. But I think at the core of it, if you are focusing on the right way to work with a customer as a human being to human being, that's like what it boils down to. Like if you're treating people like with respect, if you're trying to solve their problems, if you're following up with them efficiently and you're providing the right solution, like that's all that matters, whether you're selling snacks or software.
If you were to think about from first principles, how would you go about putting together a tech stack today? Like you mentioned, like, hey, lots of things out there that you don't need. And like things to consider as you're as a leader, as you're putting together your sales and go-to-market tech stack.
Yeah, so obviously you need a strong CRM. I think if I called it like my starting five, right? I would implement Salesforce. I would definitely have some sort of sales engagement tool. I come from Outreach, so I'm very partial. Sorry, SalesLoft or Groove. So I would always use Outreach. We'd have to have some sort of data enrichment tool. I mean, like a ZooInfo or a way to gather data. I am very partial to Gong. I love it with all my heart. I lead pretty much all sales leaders and listen to calls. So I would definitely use Gong. And then, like, I got to tell you, like, you know, now at Webflow, we have Common Room, we have other insight tools, and the ability to be able to see like where people are spending their time, where they're digging in, and like those surfacing those insights has been super valuable, especially for the sense that there's so many people out there that are just getting absolutely blasted by AI now and, you know, automation and people sending hundreds of thousands of emails, that if I'm not, as a consumer, if I'm not creeping on your website, or if I'm not interested in it, your message is likely going to fall flat with me. So I really have been digging into a lot of these tools that we have at Webflow too, to drive pipeline, which has been great. But that's, I think, how I would start thinking about it, the tech stacks for my team.
Those first ones, I think, are very established categories. The signals that you're talking about there at the end are, you know, it's a hot topic right now. What are some of and granted, like Webflow is a PLG company, so I can, you know, I probably know what you're going to say here, but hey, like, what are some of the signals that you are all using at Webflow? Or maybe even I'd love to hear, before signal-based anything was a thing, what were some of the tried and true signals that your teams have used to make sure you're properly prioritizing and reaching out to the right people, ideally at a better worse time?
I mean, ideally, you're looking for interest-based tracking, right? And so when we were, selling heavily at Outreach, interest was open rates. It was response rates, right? And the one thing that we would always double click into is that, you know, we would talk to a lot of companies that would say, oh, I have such a high response rate. And funny enough, responses can be sometimes kind of like a false positive, because somebody could be responding to you and saying, hey, take me off your list or stop emailing me. And it's like, that's a response, right? But any type of insight that, hey, you've seen my email, that's the person that I'm calling first. And so even as, you know, we were leading SDR teams, SMB, corporate at Outreach, we would have our reps filter by engagement. So if you've sent out 100 emails, you've got 15 people that open them in the last 24 hours, boom, that's your dial list right there. So those are the people that you're calling first. And that was before a lot of like the granular insights that we're getting now, that somebody liked a LinkedIn post or that somebody, you know, follows your Twitter, which I think now that we're at that point, it's a little bit creepy, but that provides so much more insight so that we can go after those people that follow, like, let's say Webflow on LinkedIn, right? They know who our company is. They've clicked the follow button. They want updates. They're liking some of those posts. And it's not on us as salespeople to kind of, I always joke with my team that you never want to be that person that sends an email, says like, hey, I love what you've done with your living room furniture, like, you know, looking in their front yard. You never want to be that person, but we know who to prioritize based off the people that are obviously engaging with our content.
And actually, on that topic, what are your thoughts on, because you strike me as somebody who really tries to, I mean, this is going to sound silly, but tries to be a human when you sell, right?
Yeah.
And to come off that way in your interactions with folks, because frankly, that's a rare thing these days, is to receive an email that is clearly, like, you know, written by a human, or at least very human focused. Curious, like, how do you think about making sure that you're bringing that, like, human-led approach to, you know, your email copy? Because you can get so caught up in, like, volume-based stuff. Like, how do you kind of blend these, like, the need to, like, do volume, but also, like, this need to also, like, be human and connect with people?
It's so important right now, because I'm not I wouldn't call myself, like, a major decision maker, right? I'm an influencer in my company, but I'm not going to be the one that signs anything for you. And I still get, gosh, maybe 20 to 30 emails a week from people trying to sell me things, you know? And I think when I'm doing my own outreach, because I still prospect with my team, like, I'm always prospecting. So I'm prospecting with my team, or if I'm coaching my reps to do it. It's like, I want them to do two things. Number one, I want them to really truly connect like a human would, in the sense that, like, don't take yourself too seriously. Like, we're all here, we're all selling software or trying to buy things, but, like, this is not the most important thing in the world right now. So, like, don't, you know, take yourself too seriously, connect human to human. And the second thing is, like, really look for mutual interests in the point that it's relatable. Like, if you were to look me up on LinkedIn, you would know enough about me to make it interesting enough without just always talking about, like, my problems here at work. You would know that, like, I'm part of an exercise group that works out rain or shine outside. You'll see me post about that. We joked around about how I'm, like, on the search for the best breakfast burrito, I try to play competitive golf. It's like, you look for these things and you can connect with some of those hobbies, likes, dislikes, and then just, like, don't take yourself too seriously. Make it fun. Shoot me a 30-second video. Give me a LinkedIn voice note. Like, make it unique and try to stand out from the crowd. Do something that everybody's not, because out of those 20 or 30 emails, I would say 95% of them are just, like, you know, targeted, automated copy.
You mentioned something in there, and I don't want it to escape us from the conversation. You mentioned that you do cold calling sessions with your team. Love it.
Yes.
Cold calling, outbound prospecting. Yeah, like, it's not revelatory. It's very difficult these days. People are inundated. As you mentioned, you've got, you know, many emails coming into your inbox. What's something that you do with your team to kind of keep them motivated during these cold call sessions? And I'd love to hear any takes for team managers or leads out there looking for ways to, like, motivate their teams to succeed in that environment. Especially in the remote age, right?
Because, like, right, it's so tough. So first thing is, I tell my team that every inbound today was an outbound yesterday. So there can be a lot of time that you go and outbound and you're not going to get anything back, but then a month later you get an inbound from that company, right? So every inbound today was an outbound yesterday. So it's all about planting those seeds. And as much as people may not like all of the, like, workout or gym analogies for prospecting, I don't know that there's anything that is more aligned. There's a reason why group fitness classes are so popular, right? Like, you think about it, you got a Peloton, right? I had a Peloton for a long time. And, like, even that, you're doing it at home, but you're doing it in a group, right? There's people being shouted out and there's names on the leaderboard.
Yeah.
And, like, you go to Orange Theory, right? And there's group fitness. It's popular for a reason. And so thinking about this with prospecting, one of the best ways that I've seen to do it and motivate people is you take an hour block, you get everyone together, you have them prep their call lists. And for that hour, you get everyone on the Zoom together and you're dialing down. You put yourself on mute, you're doing cold calls, people are jumping back on, celebrating wins, virtual high fives, but you are all prospecting together. Right, so when Webflow has major events, we've got a big conference coming up in a month. This was, like, a big opportunity for us to invite a lot of our current customers, prospects, like, close lost deals to this, you know, major conference that's coming up. It's like, what did I do? I got everybody together. I said, hey, before this, you basically are pulling your list of people you're going to contact. And for this hour, we're prospecting together. And I'm right there with them. I'm going through these lists, and I'm like searching in, you know, Common Room or Sixth Sense or LinkedIn on my connections and messaging people and emailing and like, and you're doing it all together as a group. And sometimes fitness sucks, right? It's sometimes you hate it when you're going through it, but the end of a group workout class is when everyone's celebrating, high-fiving, and it's like, that's the same way that a prospecting session can be. And similarly to a fitness class, you're going to walk out of an Orange Theory class or get off the bike at a Peloton class, and you're not going to have a six pack, right? You're not going to be shredded, but you continuously do that over and over and over, and you're going to increase your fitness or your stamina or your just overall health. And that's the same way with pipeline, right? You're not going to do one session and come out with like 18 opportunities, but you continuously do this over and over and over. And that's what separates the great AEs from the people that are just hitting quota or barely missing.
Love that. So any call outs for like what you guys use to kind of run these sessions, whether it's in person, remote, like anything that you're using today, for those who maybe don't do these sessions and are looking for something to like enable them, to kind of run these types of sessions
in terms of tools.
Yeah. Tooling process. Yeah. What
yeah, so I mean, so we have outreach as well. So that's the big one where so we're an outreach customer. So we're able to go through, and that helps us not only see like who's opened up our sequences around the event or pull lists of engagement. We obviously have insights tools like Common Room. We have Sixth Sense as well. So that shows us basically who's been on our website, who's been following us on LinkedIn, who follows us on our Twitter page. So we are able to basically build a list of 20 to 30 contacts in our current book of business for each rep before we get here. Because the problem I see with most prospecting sessions is that most people will get into a group session and then they'll say, oh, okay, let me go find out who I'm going to call. And if you do not have your call list prepared going into your block, it will not be successful. So that is all the prep work before, is that you get your 20 or 30 or 40 prospects with their numbers all loaded in so you can dial down. And that comes prepared. And so once we hop onto a Zoom, you know, sometimes I'll like play some music to get us going, pump us all up. And then we've got, you know, all of our reps on that Zoom where we basically just hit the mute button and then we start prospecting down for that hour so that you know, you're grinding through the suck with the rest of your AEs. You're not just sitting in your home completely wondering whatever else is doing while you're, you know, making cold calls. You're all doing it together. And that's like how I view, you know, the group fitness mentality. Is that you're all going through the suck as one.
Love it. Going through the suck as one.
I've never really called it that, but it just worked out.
No, it works out. I love it. Put it on a t-shirt. Related to this concept, what are some practices that you think may be, I don't know, common practices in terms of pipeline management, forecasting, what have you, that may or may not be some that are really beneficial in terms of like properly predicting where you're going to end up and helping the team like own their individual business, and then other practices that you've seen that maybe you don't believe in and maybe strongly so. What would be curious to get your take on that, because I know pipeline is absolutely critical today, more so than it's almost ever been, making sure you've got proper coverage. So yeah, we'd love to hear how you're managing that process.
So like you said, there's nothing more important than pipeline. You can't hit your number without it. And all pipeline doesn't equate to good pipeline. But I think there is, I view my role as a frontline manager, there's nothing more important in my week than the one-on-one time I spend with my reps. That's P0. That's the most important time, not only for me, but for them. And there's two sides to how I'd view a one-on-one, right? There's their time, which is anything that they want to come forward. Are they facing any roadblocks? Are there things that are taking way too much time than they should be? Are they having trouble personally, professionally? Do they want to talk about career advancement, right? So anything that they're bringing. And then there's the other side of the coin, which is my time. And my time in the one-on-one is ensuring that I have a grasp on all of their deals and that I know how to properly forecast them for my boss, right? Because the other part of my job is going in and properly calling out my number to my VP and making sure that that's accurate. And so I think to your question, the one thing that gets thrown around a lot that I don't necessarily agree with is group forecasting calls. I've seen this in multiple companies that I work with, and I am very much against the group forecasting call. Now, I think for leaders, there is some value in it that I'm able to see like what other leaders are doing for their team and what, you know, internal resources they're bringing in to support different deals and strategies, et cetera, et cetera. But for reps, I never have a group forecasting call. I don't have all my reps come into a call and say, hey, these are my five deals I'm working on and go through them. And there's really two reasons why. Number one is that if I have, you know, Josh on my team going through deals, Susan is 100% on Slack or Facebook or Twitter or, you know, answering emails. She does not care what Josh's deals are doing. She is zoned out, right? And then when I get to Susan, I've got Clara who is doing the exact same thing. So, you know, you've always got one rep who's on the spotlight for 5-10 minutes and they're going to go through a couple of their deals, and every other rep is completely zoned out. They don't give a shit, right? So that's how I feel about that side. And then also that if I pinpoint something that's trending in Josh's deals, or, you know, he's missing a couple certain steps, or if I see that there's something amiss, I want to be able to work with Josh and give him that face or that FaceTime and that feedback one-on-one, right? Because I believe that feedback positively should be given in a group. Feedback constructively should be one-on-one. And so if I'm noticing that, I don't want to call Josh out in front of all his peers, right? I may ask him some questions, but it's really that one-on-one where I want to dig in and understand like what's happening with the deals. Why are some of these not moving forward, and see if he has any conclusions instead of just calling him out and putting him in, you know, in front of his peers, looking like he's got something to miss. So I don't love the group forecast call. I've actually never done them. And yeah, those are my guns that I'd stick to.
I'm curious if you were to give advice to a, you know, early mid-career AE, what are some of the best practices for coming prepared to those one-on-ones to make the most of them from an AE's perspective? Like for the reps that you see like really succeed, how are they showing up to those one-on-ones? What are the things they should be doing? How should they be looking at their business? Would be curious to get your perspective on that. Because I think sometimes that one-on-one can just go wasted if you don't really come prepared, if you just treat it like any other, you know, meeting on the calendar.
And you just said the magic words, right? Come prepared. And there's two ways I would do it. So as, you know, an individual contributor, let's say if you're a rep or even myself as a manager, like I come to my one-on-ones, usually documenting everything that I want to discuss with my leader beforehand. So you either have a shared document, you've got Slack, email, whatever it is. If you're a rep, send your manager and say, hey, these are the talking points that I'd love to discuss in our one-on-one this afternoon, right? Do it usually 24 hours beforehand so that the manager has time to review that and understand the talking points going in. They're going to be much more prepared. It's going to be a better discussion, whether that's around career development, you know, bottlenecks, whatever that may be. When you're talking about deals, the biggest thing that I instruct my reps, and I set this expectation when I start managing them, is that when you come to a one-on-one with me and we're talking about deals, I want you to have everything accurate and up to date, right? So that means your close dates, that means the ARR that it's forecasted for, that means the stage or the, you know, the forecasting stage or the pipeline stage that it's in. But most importantly is your next steps. And this is a huge thing that most reps don't either understand or get wrong, is that for the next steps, more often than not, reps confuse next steps as status updates, right? So it'll say like, hey, I've got this 20K deal that I'm working with Superbiz. It's supposed to close, you know, the end of October, whatever, whatever. And the next step is waiting for Bob to sign the contract, right? It's like, that's not a next step. That's a status update, right? A next step tells me as a leader what you are doing as a rep. Right. So Bob may have the contract, but what are you doing about it? Right. Are you reaching out to Bob at 4 p.m. on Thursday to make sure he doesn't have any last outstanding questions before this contract is signed? And then the last thing in the next steps that we need is your tactical next step, but it's then the goal around it. So the goal is to get Bob to sign the contract. Right. And that way, if you're a rep and you come prepared, and when my reps do, I'm able to say like, great, you've got all your ARR, your close dates, your forecast stage all up to date. And then your next step says, hey, you're calling Bob at 4 p.m. to get the contract signed and that's your goal. We can either talk about strategy around it or, you know, did this happen? Yes. Or did this happen? No. And why not? It becomes more of a strategic conversation versus, you know, the way I see most one-on-ones run with a manager is they'll come in and they're just like hounding their reps on how to update next day, next steps or status updates. Mm. So if you come prepared with a lot of that, you and your manager can focus on actually the fun part of sales. And that's, you know, how to close more deals.
It seems like you get to focus on that. Yeah. Like you said, that fun part, if you come prepared, do the basics. We're kind of near the top of the show today. What I wanted to ask, it's, you know, kind of the topic du jour these days. All right, AI SDR, AI AE, like, where do you sit on the spectrum of, like, I guess, curious to get your perspective on where today, and then maybe 10 years from now, all right? You spend a lot of time thinking about sales methodologies. Today, how do you see AI best assisting reps and SDRs and even sales managers? Are you one of those, all of them? Love that. And then maybe crystal ball, Sean taking his shot at like what he thinks AI is going to be, you know, 5 years down the line. I know we're talking about exponential functions and they're really hard to like nail down, but would love to just like hear your perspective on that, because I know this is a topic that a lot of sales managers and leaders are thinking about, like, how much do I need to be leaning into AI today versus like, hey, do I wait for this, for all these tools to kind of work themselves out?
I could be so wrong here.
It comes with if we're talking about AI, and like I said, it's growing, yeah, like crazy. So your shot is as good as anybody's.
I put myself in a consumer's shoes, right? There's being in sales, there's a lot of things that, like, I am marketing's like perfect person, right? Is that I get like, oh, I'm like, ooh, a shiny object, I should go buy it. Especially if you pitch me like golf clubs, you know, I'm just like, oh, this looks great. It'll help me, you know, take a couple strokes off my game. But I think about that as a consumer, do I want to be sold by AI? And I don't know that I ever do. And that's like, I think AI SDRs, I think most people are going to get annoyed by the mass blast of emails. And I think at the end of the day, people are more often than not going to do 80% of the research before they ever decide to contact a company. And most of that research is going to be done by themselves or by referral, right? Like, Madsen, if you told me like, hey, Sean, you should check out this company, that's what's going to incline me to do so versus like a blanket email from an SDR, whether AI or not. AI salespeople, I think the benefit of AI is going to be able to make salespeople's jobs a lot easier, but truly, I don't know that we're ever going to lose some of that human necessity in terms of that connection. And so that's, I say this of where I believe it's going to go, because I hope it goes this way, that most AEs in the future can use AI to simplify a lot of the remedial tasks or a lot of things that they do in their day. But no, I don't hope we ever get replaced by AI. Like, I love working with, because I think, you know, and this boils down to it, like, part of my job that I love the most is just working with people, right? Mm-hmm. And like being able to, part of why I love being a frontline leader is I love coaching people and I love helping them improve, not only professionally, but personally. And I just don't know that like a robot could do that, or maybe they could do it better than me, but I don't want to. So that's my answer.
So here's to hoping we don't have to find out the answer to that question anytime soon. I've had a blast. It's been fun. It's been a great conversation, Sean. Before we wrap up, for those listening, I know you've got a pretty strong social presence, so I want to make sure you're able to point them in the right direction. But yeah, how do people stay on top of like what you're putting out in terms of content? How do they get in touch with you? What's the best way? Just let us know how to kind of follow what you're up to.
Thanks. Check me out on LinkedIn. You can follow me there. You can shoot me a message. If you've got a recommendation of a breakfast burrito, I'll always respond back. And I do my best to get back to people, especially if they've got questions about sales. I love helping salespeople because I've been in your shoes. So I appreciate that you're grinding, and come follow me on LinkedIn. Say hello.
There you have it. And I can attest, he puts out great content. I have been following recently as well. So this has been another episode of GoToMarket Mavericks, and we will catch you next time.